You are listening to The Bookshelf. Welcome back. I'm Mary Walker, and tonight we are continuing Alice's Adventures in Wonderland by Lewis Carroll. When we left Alice, she had just come upon the Cheshire Cat. Let's see what the cat has to say. The cat only grinned when it saw Alice. It looked good-natured, she thought. Still, it had very long claws and a great many teeth, so she felt it ought to be treated with respect. Cheshire Puss, she began rather timidly, as she did not at all know whether it would like the name. However, it only grinned a little wider. Come, it's pleased so far, thought Alice, and she went on. Would you tell me, please, which way I ought to walk from here? It depends a good deal on where you want to get to, said the cat. I don't care much where, said Alice. Then it doesn't matter which way you walk, said the cat. So long as I get somewhere, Alice added as an explanation. Oh, you're sure to do that, said the cat, if you only walk long enough. Alice felt that this could not be denied, so she tried another question. What sort of people live about here?
In that direction, the cat said, waving its right paw around, lives a hatter. And in that direction, waving the other paw, lives a March Hare. Visit either you like. They're both mad.
But I don't want to go among mad people, Alice remarked.
Oh, you can't help that, said the cat. We're all mad here. I'm mad. You're mad.
How do you know I'm mad? Said Alice.
Oh, you must be, said the cat, or you wouldn't have come here.
Alice didn't think that proved it at all. However, she went on. How do you know that you're mad?
To begin with, said the cat. A dog's not mad, you grant that.
I suppose so, said Alice.
Well then, the cat went on, you see a dog growls when it's angry and wags its tail when it's pleased. Now I growl when I'm pleased and wag my tail when I'm angry. Therefore, I'm mad.
I call it purring, not growling, said Alice.
Call it what you like, said the cat. Do you play croquet with the queen today?
I should like to very much, said Alice, but I haven't been invited yet.
You'll see me there, said the cat, and vanished. Alice was not much surprised at this. She was getting so used to queer things happening. While she was looking at the place where it had been, it suddenly appeared again.
By the by,
what became of the baby? Said the cat. I'd nearly forgotten to ask.
It turned into a pig, Alice answered very quietly, just as if the cat had come back in a natural way.
I thought it would, said the cat, and vanished again.
Alice waited a little, half expecting to see it again, but it did not appear, and after a minute or two, she walked on in the direction in which the March Hare was said to live. I've seen hatters before, she said to herself. The March Hare will be much the most interesting, and perhaps as this is May, it won't be raving mad, at least not so mad as it was in March. As she said this, she looked up, and there was the cat again, sitting on a branch of a tree.
Did you say pig or fig? Said the cat.
I said pig, replied Alice, and I wish you wouldn't keep appearing and vanishing so suddenly. It makes one quite giddy.
All right, said the cat,
and this time it vanished quite slowly, beginning with the end of its tail and ending with the grin, which remained some time after the rest of it had gone.
Well, I've often seen a cat without a grin, thought Alice. But a grin without a cat? It's the most curious thing I ever saw in all my life.
She had not gone much farther when she came in sight of the house of the March Hare. She thought it must be the right house because the chimneys were shaped like ears and the roof was thatched with fur. It was so large a house that she did not like to go nearer till she had nibbled some more of the left-hand bit of mushroom and raised herself to about 2 feet high. Even then she walked up toward it rather timidly, saying to herself, "Suppose it should be raving mad after all. I almost wish I'd gone to see the Hatter instead." Chapter 7. A Mad Tea Party. There was a table set out under a tree in front of the house, and the March Hare and the Hatter were having tea at it. A dormouse was sitting between them, fast asleep, and the other two were using it as a cushion, resting their elbows on it and talking over its head. "Very uncomfortable for the dormouse," thought Alice. "Only as it's asleep, I suppose it doesn't mind." The table was a large one, and the three were all crowded together at one corner of it. "No room, no room," they cried out when they saw Alice coming. "There's plenty of room," said Alice indignantly, and she sat down in a large armchair at one end of the table. "Have some wine," the March Hare said in an encouraging tone. Alice looked all around the table, but there was nothing on it but tea. "I don't see any wine," she remarked. "There isn't any," said the March Hare. "Then it wasn't very civil of you to offer it," said Alice angrily. "It wasn't very civil of you to sit down without being invited," said the March Hare. "I didn't know it was your table," said Alice. "It's laid for a great many more than three." "Your hair wants cutting," said the Hatter. He had been looking at Alice for some time with great curiosity, and this was his first speech. "You should learn not to make personal remarks," Alice said with some severity. "It's very rude." The Hatter opened his eyes very wide on hearing this, but all he said was, "Why is a raven like a writing desk?" "Oh, come, we shall have some fun now," thought Alice. "I'm glad they've begun asking riddles. I believe I can guess that," she added aloud. "Do you mean that you think you can find out the answer to it?" said the March Hare. "Oh, exactly so," said Alice. "Then you should say what you mean," the March Hare went on. "I do," Alice hastily replied. At least, I mean what I say. That's the same thing, you know." "Not the same thing a bit," said the Hatter. "Why, you might just as well say that I see what I eat is the same as I eat what I see." "You might just as well say," added the March Hare, "that I like what I get is the same as I get what I like." "You might just as well say," added the dormouse, who seemed to be talking in his sleep, "that I breathe when I sleep is the same as I sleep when I breathe." "It is the same with you," said the Hatter. And here the conversation dropped, and the party sat silent for a minute, while Alice thought over all she could remember about ravens and writing desks, which wasn't much. The Hatter was the first to break the silence. "What day of the month is it?" he asked, turning to Alice. He had taken his watch out of his pocket and was looking at it uneasily, shaking it every now and then and holding it to his ear. Alice considered a little and then said, "The 4th. 2 days wrong," sighed the Hatter. "I told you butter wouldn't suit the works," he added, looking angrily at the March Hare. "It was the best butter," the March Hare meekly replied. "Yes, but some crumbs must have got in as well," the Hatter grumbled. "You shouldn't have put it in with a bread knife." The March Hare took the watch and looked at it gloomily. Then he dipped it into his cup of tea and looked at it again, but he could think of nothing better to say than his first remark. "It was the best butter, you know." Alice had been looking over his shoulder with some curiosity. "What a funny watch," she remarked. "It tells the day of the month and doesn't tell what o'clock it is." "Why should it?" muttered the Hatter. "Does your watch tell you what year it is?" "Of course not," Alice replied very readily, "but that's because it stays the same year for such a long time together."
"Which is just the case with mine," said the Hatter. Alice felt dreadfully puzzled. The Hatter's remark seemed to her to have no sort of meaning in it, and yet it was certainly English.
"I don't quite understand you," she said as politely as she could.
"The Dormouse is asleep again," said the Hatter, and he poured a little hot tea onto its nose. The Dormouse shook its head impatiently and said without opening its eyes,
"Of course, just what I was going to remark myself."
"Have you guessed the riddle yet?" the Hatter said, turning to Alice again.
"No, I give up," Alice replied. "What's the answer?"
"I haven't the slightest idea," said the Hatter. "Nor I," said the March Hare.
Alice sighed wearily.
"I think you might do something better with the time," she said, "than wasting it in asking riddles that have no answers."
"If you knew time as well as I do," said the Hatter, "you wouldn't talk about wasting it. It's him."
"I don't know what you mean," said Alice.
"Of course you don't," the Hatter said, tossing his head contemptuously. "I dare say you never even spoke to time."
"Perhaps not," Alice cautiously replied. "But I know I have to beat time when I learn music."
"Ah, that accounts for it," said the Hatter. "He won't stand beating. Now, if you only kept on good terms with him, he'd do almost anything you liked with the clock. For instance, suppose it were 9 o'clock in the morning, just time to begin lessons. You'd only have to whisper a hint to time, and round goes the clock in a twinkling, 1:30, time for dinner."
"I only wish it was," the March Hare said to itself in a whisper.
"That would be grand, certainly," said Alice thoughtfully. "But then I shouldn't be hungry for it, you know."
"Not at first, perhaps," said the Hatter, "but you could keep it to 1:30 as long as you liked."
"Is that the way you manage?" Alice asked.
The Hatter shook his head mournfully. "Not I," he replied. "We quarreled last March, just before he went mad, you know," pointing with his teaspoon at the March Hare. "It was at the great concert given by the Queen of Hearts, and I had to sing, 'Twinkle, twinkle, little bat, how I wonder what you're at.' You know the song, perhaps?"
"I've heard something like it," said Alice.
"It goes on, you know," the Hatter continued, "in this way. 'Up above the world you fly, like a tea tray in the sky, twinkle, twinkle.'"
Here the Dormouse shook itself and began singing in its sleep, "Twinkle, twinkle, twinkle, twinkle," and went on so long that they had to pinch it to make it stop.
"Well, I'd hardly finished the first verse," said the Hatter, "when the Queen bawled out, 'He's murdering the time, off with his head!'"
"How dreadfully savage!" exclaimed Alice.
"And ever since that," the Hatter went on in a mournful tone, "he won't do a thing I ask. It's always 6 o'clock now."
A bright idea came into Alice's head. "Is that the reason so many tea things are put out here?" she asked.
"Yes, that's it," said the Hatter with a sigh. "It's always tea time, and we've no time to wash the things between whiles."
"Then you keep moving around, I suppose," said Alice.
"Exactly so," said the Hatter, "as the things get used up."
"But when you come to the beginning again," Alice ventured to ask.
"Suppose we change the subject," the March Hare interrupted, yawning. "I'm getting tired of this. I vote the young lady tell us a story."
"I'm afraid I don't know one," said Alice, rather alarmed at the proposal.
"Then the Dormouse shall," they both cried. "Wake up, Dormouse!"
And they pinched it on both sides at once. The Dormouse slowly opened his eyes. "I wasn't asleep," he said in a hoarse, feeble voice. "I heard every word you fellows were saying."
"Tell us a story," said the March Hare.
"Yes, please do," pleaded Alice.
"And be quick about it," added the Hatter, "or you'll be asleep again before it's done." "Once upon a time there were three little sisters," the Dormouse began in a great hurry, "and their names were Elsie, Lacey, and Tilly, and they lived at the bottom of a well." "What did they live on?" said Alice, who always took a great interest in questions of eating and drinking. "They lived on treacle," said the Dormouse, after thinking a minute or two. "They couldn't have done that, you know," Alice gently remarked. "They'd have been ill." "So they were," said the Dormouse, "very ill." Alice tried a little to fancy to herself what such an extraordinary way of living would be like. But it puzzled her too much, so she went on. "But why did they live at the bottom of a well?"
"Take some more tea," the March Hare said to Alice very earnestly.
"I've had nothing yet," replied Alice in an offended tone, "so I can't take more."
"You mean you can't take less," said the Hatter. "It's very easy to take more than nothing."
"Nobody asked your opinion," said Alice.
"Who's making personal remarks now?" the Hatter asked triumphantly. Alice did not quite know what to say to this, so she helped herself to some tea and bread and butter, and then turned to the Dormouse and repeated her question.
"Why did they live at the bottom of a well?"
The Dormouse again took a minute or two to think about it, and then said,
"It was a treacle well."
"There's no such thing," Alice was beginning very angrily, but the Hatter and the March Hare went, "Shh, shh," and the Dormouse sulkily remarked,
"If you can't be civil, you'd better finish the story for yourself."
"No, please go on," Alice said very humbly. "I won't interrupt you again. I dare say there may be one."
"One indeed," said the Dormouse indignantly. However, he consented to go on. "And so these three little sisters, they were learning to draw, you know."
"What did they draw?" said Alice, quite forgetting her promise.
"Treacle," said the Dormouse, without considering at all this time.
"I want a clean cup," interrupted the Hatter. "Let's all move one place on."
He moved on as he spoke, and the Dormouse followed him. The March Hare moved into the Dormouse's place, and Alice rather unwillingly took the place of the March Hare. The Hatter was the only one who got any advantage from the change, and Alice was a good deal worse off than before, as the March Hare had just upset the milk jug into his plate. Alice did not wish to offend the Dormouse again, so she began very cautiously.
"But I don't understand. Where did they draw the treacle from?"
"You can draw water from a water well," said the Hatter. "So I should think you could draw treacle out of a treacle well, eh, stupid?"
"But they were in the well,"
Alice said to the Dormouse, not choosing to notice this last remark.
"Of course they were," said the Dormouse, "well in."
This answer so confused poor Alice that she let the Dormouse go on for some time without interrupting it.
"They were learning to draw," the Dormouse went on, yawning and rubbing his eyes, for it was getting very sleepy, "and they drew all manner of things, everything that begins with an M."
"Why an M?" said Alice.
"Why not?" said the March Hare.
Alice was silent. The Dormouse had closed its eyes by this time and was going off into a doze, but on being pinched by the Hatter, it woke up again with a little shriek and went on.
"That begins with an M, such as mousetraps and the moon and memory and muchness. You know you say things are much of a muchness. Did you ever see such a thing as a drawing of a muchness?"
"Really? Now you ask me," said Alice, very much confused. "I don't think..."
"Then you shouldn't talk," said the Hatter.
Oh, this piece of rudeness was more than Alice could bear. She got up in great disgust and walked off. The Dormouse fell asleep instantly, and neither of the others took the least notice of her going, though she looked back once or twice, half hoping that they would call after her.
The last time she saw them, they were trying to put the Dormouse into the teapot.
At any rate, I'll never go there again, said Alice as she picked her way through the wood. It's the stupidest tea party I ever was at in all my life. Just as she said this, she noticed that one of the trees had a door leading right into it. That's very curious, she thought. But everything's curious today. I think I may as well go in at once. And in she went. Once more she found herself in the long hall and close to the little glass table. Now I'll manage better this time, she said to herself, and began by taking the little golden key and unlocking the door that led into the garden. Then she set to work nibbling at the mushroom. She had kept a piece of it in her pocket, till she was about a foot high. Then she walked down the little passage, and then she found herself at last in the beautiful garden among the bright flower beds and the cool fountains. Chapter 8. The Queen's Croquet Ground. A large rose tree stood near the entrance of the garden. The roses growing on it were white, but there were three gardeners at it, busily painting them red. Alice thought this a very curious thing, and she went nearer to watch them. And just as she came up to them, she heard one of them say, "Look out now, Five. Don't go splashing paint over me like that." "I couldn't help it," said Five in a sulky tone. "Seven jogged my elbow." On which Seven looked up and said, "That's right, Five. Always lay the blame on others." "You'd better not talk," said Five. "I heard the Queen say only yesterday you deserve to be beheaded." "What for?" said the one who had spoken first. "That's none of your business, too," said Seven. "Yes, it is his business," said Five, "and I'll tell him. It was for bringing the cook tulip roots instead of onions." Seven flung down his brush and had just begun, "Well, of all the unjust things," when his eye chanced to fall upon Alice as she stood watching them, and he checked himself suddenly. The others looked around also, and all of them bowed low.
"Would you please tell me," said Alice a little timidly, "why are you painting those roses?"
Five and Seven said nothing, but looked at Two. Two began in a low voice, "Why, the fact is, you see, miss, this here ought to have been a red rose tree, and we put a white one in by mistake. And if the Queen was to find it out, we should all have our heads cut off, you know. So you see, miss, we're doing our best afore she comes to."
At this moment, Five, who had been anxiously looking across the garden, called out, "The Queen! The Queen!" And the three gardeners instantly threw themselves flat upon their faces. There was a sound of many footsteps, and Alice looked around, eager to see the Queen. First came 10 soldiers carrying clubs. These were all shaped like the three gardeners, oblong and flat, with their hands and feet at the corners. Next came the 10 courtiers. These were ornamented all over with diamonds and walked two and two as the soldiers did. After these came the royal children. There were 10 of them, and the little dears came jumping merrily along hand in hand in couples. They were all ornamented with hearts. Next came the guests, mostly kings and queens, and among them Alice recognized the white rabbit. It was talking in a hurried, nervous manner, smiling at everything that was said, and went by without noticing her. Then followed the knave of hearts, carrying the king's crown on a crimson velvet cushion. And last of all this grand procession came the king and queen of hearts. Alice was rather doubtful whether she ought not to lie down on her face like the three gardeners, but she could not remember ever having heard of such a rule at processions. And besides, what would be the use of a procession, she thought, if people had to lie down on their faces so that they couldn't see it? So she stood where she was and waited.
When the procession came opposite to Alice, they all stopped and looked at her. And the queen said severely, "Who is this?" She said it to the Knave of Hearts, who only bowed and smiled in reply.
"Idiot!"
said the queen, tossing her head impatiently, and turning to Alice, she went on,
"What's your name, child?"
"My name is Alice, so please your majesty," said Alice very politely. But she added to herself,
"Why, they're only a pack of cards after all. I needn't be afraid of them." "And who are these?" said the queen, pointing to the three gardeners who were lying round the rose tree. For you see, as they were lying on their faces, and the pattern on their backs was the same as for the rest of the pack, she could not tell whether they were gardeners or soldiers or courtiers or three of her own children.
"How should I know?" said Alice, surprised at her own courage. "It's no business of mine."
The queen turned crimson with fury, and after glaring at her for a moment like a wild beast, began screaming, "Off with her head, off!"
"Nonsense," said Alice very loudly and decidedly, and the queen was silent. The king laid his hand upon her arm and timidly said, "Consider, my dear, she is only a child." The queen turned angrily away from him and said to the knave,
"Turn them over."
The knave did so very carefully with one foot.
"Get up,"
said the queen in a shrill, loud voice, and the three gardeners instantly jumped up and began bowing to the king, the queen, the royal children, and everybody else.
"Leave off that," screamed the queen. "You make me giddy."
And then, turning to the rose tree, she went on,
"What have you been doing here?"
"May it please your majesty," said Two, in a very humble tone, getting down on one knee as he spoke. "We were trying..."
"I see," said the queen, who had meanwhile been examining the roses. "Off with their heads!"
And the procession moved on, three of the soldiers remaining behind to execute the unfortunate gardeners, who ran to Alice for protection.
"You shan't be beheaded," said Alice, and she put them into a large flower pot that stood near.
The three soldiers wandered about for a minute or two, looking for them, and then quietly marched off after the others.
"Are their heads off?"
shouted the queen.
"Their heads are gone, if it please your majesty,"
the soldiers shouted in reply.
"That's right," shouted the queen. "Can you play croquet?"
The soldiers were silent and looked at Alice, as the question was evidently meant for her.
"Yes," shouted Alice. "Come on, then," roared the queen,
and Alice joined the procession, wondering very much what would happen next.
That marks the end of this adventure in Wonderland. I'm Mary Walker. Join us on the next episode of The Bookshelf for many more adventures to come.